That's what we call women empowerment. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that likes its masala movies extra hot. Now, one of my recent film watching goals has to be to try and watch more Indian cinema. After all, it's one of the most successful film industries in the world with its own unique style and traditions. As some of you may remember, a little while back, we looked at the deliriously over-the-top action film Doom 2, and we're returning to the Indian action film genre on this show as we take a look at one of its biggest hits in recent years, Tiger Zinda Hai, aka Tiger's Alive. Now, to help me review the film, I had hoped to get an expert in Bollywood films. Instead, I'm joined by a man who thinks Indian cinema begins and ends with Dances with Wolves. It's Nick Rehak from French Toast Sunday. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing well, Will. Thank you. Dances with Wolves. Dude, I haven't seen that one in a long time.
But you have actually seen at least one other genuinely Indian film, which was Doom 2, which we reviewed a little while back. And that was a lot of fun. And I know you really enjoyed that one.
I very much enjoyed that film. In fact, I was hanging out with my brother yesterday, and he said, "Hey, you ever notice the amount of like Bollywood films on Amazon Prime?" And I'm like, "Hey, I got one you need to watch right now."
Well, I'm glad you're spreading the word about Doom 2, because that is a fantastically entertaining film. And yeah, I wouldn't hesitate in recommending it to anyone. But I think, you know, let's not waste time on this particular show. Let's get stuck right into it. So let's listen to a bit of the trailer for Tiger Zinda Hai. And it's the only bit of the trailer I could understand.
Time has come. I will hunt and take control of my land. Prepare for the war.
They kill our family. We will avenge their death. We'll sacrifice our lives for them.
Hum sabhi yahi mare jayenge. पागल है ये लोग मरिया पागल
अल्लाह सुलाना
देश की इज्जत की बात है
अल्लाह सुलाना
टाइगर दम है तो रोक ले
उस्मान अगर तुझ में दम है तो तू अब मुझे रोक के दिखा.
Tiger Zinda Hai came out in 2017. It's a sequel to 2012's Ek Tha Tiger. Hope I pronounced that somewhat accurately. This film picks up with Tiger, India's top secret agent, living off the grid in Austria, of all places. He'd disappeared at the end of the first film with a Pakistani spy named Zoya, who is now his wife. However, their peaceful alpine life, fighting wolves and beating up thugs in supermarkets, comes to an abrupt end when a group of Indian and Pakistani nurses are taken hostage by an ISIS-type terrorist in Iraq. With an international crisis looming, the Indian Secret Service tracks down Tiger to lead a mission to rescue the nurses before an American airstrike aimed at killing the terrorist mastermind. Tiger Zinda Hai is what's called a masala movie, so as the name suggests, it's a distinctly Indian film genre. Like the spice mix it's named after, masala movies mix lots of different genres, action, comedy, romance, melodrama, mixes them all together, and they also tend to feature musical numbers as well. Heading up the cast as Tiger is Salman Khan, who is an Indian megastar, if you want to go and investigate. Exploding Helicopter fans will want to check out his other franchise, Kick, the first one of which also includes a chopper fireball. And alongside him, once again, is Katrina Kaif, reprising her role as Zoya. The film has a rating of exactly 6 on IMDb and a 65% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Those scores reflect the critical reception of the film, which was rather mixed. Yet despite getting middling praise, this film was a huge success on release, with one of the biggest opening weekends in Indian cinema history. So with all that out the way, Nick, what did you make of Tiger Zinda Hai?
I quite enjoyed Tiger Zinda Hai. I felt at times it was a little overlong, and the pace just – I wanted to get there sooner. I felt like there was a lot going on to get to the point at hand. but I enjoyed it. I didn't go in expecting another Doom 2 because obviously, you know, all Indian film is not the same. There's different aspects to it. So I toned it back and I was just looking for something enjoyable. And I definitely found that here. It's a little more subdued. And as far as the action, it's still very stylized, but it's a little more realistic, which is good. I thought everybody did a solid job acting wise. And it caught me off guard at how much, not that I wouldn't enjoy it, but I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you say, because this was the second time I've watched this film. And, you know, I thought, this will be a good one to do with Nick, because I know how much he enjoyed Doom 2. And, you know, I really enjoyed this on a first viewing. But coming back to watch it on a rewatch, this I do start to see some of more of the problems on this viewing. And I think, you know, mentally in my mind, I've subsequently sort of marked this film down a little bit. I still agree with you. It's still a really enjoyable film to watch. I think there's a really sort of nice vibe in this film, which, despite the fact that you've got like an ISIS terrorist as the main, or ISIS style terrorist as the sort of main villain in this film, I think it's somewhat odd that it still has that nice vibe. And there's actually some sort of quite sort of serious violence in this film, yet somehow there's an atmosphere in this film where you feel safe and that everything's going to turn out all right. And this film ends with our heroes adopting a former child suicide bomber. So, you know, how often do you see that in a film?
You never see that in a film. If anything, at the end, they're probably burying the suicide bomber, or they're at the grave laying flowers or something, or some kind of memorial service. But I absolutely agree with you. There's this weird feeling of like safety the entire time. And I think it's just because the film is so bright and colorful. Mm. Like I can see in like in some film bays when they're editing, the director going, yeah, can we color correct that and make it more washed or make it a different color because it's a fantasy film. But this, I can just imagine the director going, can we make it brighter? Is there a way to can we amplify the colors here? Because it's so bright and it's so inviting. And there are some tense situations, but I wonder if it was just a little more, I guess, drab or dreary, if the tension would be amped up that much more. I'm sure there's more instances where the tension's supposed to be there. I didn't feel that, but there's definitely one or two moments where I'm like, oh, here we go. Like, what's going to happen here? But yeah, it's like you said, it's this weird like comfort. It's this weird safety when you're watching the whole thing.
Well, let's dig a little bit more into the plot of this film, because I thought there was some really good stuff here, but I also thought that there were some elements that really could have used some improvement. And I think you've already touched on one of those at the moment. I do think that this film, I mean, the runtime of this film is 2:40, which is not unusual in Indian movies. They do tend to run on the long side, but I don't think that this film necessarily justified the runtime. You know, it did seem to be some parts of this film where, I don't know, the kind of action spun its wheels. But the kind of the biggest element I had a problem with this film, be interested to know your thoughts on it, was the fact that the action here, or the story whereby our heroes have to, the plot involves them infiltrating this oil drilling facility where they can then, well, I won't spare you all the details, they have to infiltrate that oil facility in order to then get access later to the hospital where the nurses are all being held by the terrorists. So and all of this action takes place over 7 days, and it just kind of I felt this, you know, this film would have been immensely improved if they'd compressed that timeline, like if it was taking place in 24 hours or maybe 36 hours. You know, if your film's set over 7 days, then that's not really much of a ticking clock pushing the action along.
No, especially when you have like the feeling of this ludicrous setup that they have going on. Like, so from what I got from it is they're getting into this oil facility to facilitate some kind of fake burn to get them into the hospital. To get close to somebody, some of it didn't make sense to me on why they were taking so much time building up to get to that. I agree with you. I feel like the timeline should have been a lot shorter. And when is any foreign government gonna come to America, reach out to Americans and say, hey, can you give us like 7 days? No way is the U.S. government gonna be like, oh yeah, that's fine. You need an eighth? We'll give you an eighth. It's gonna be like 7 days. Try 7 hours.
Yeah,
like they're not. That's not. And again, we're not trying to say that this movie needs to be more realistic or whatever. But there just needs to be, like you said, shorten the timeline, and that would ramp up the tension too, and make it that much more exciting. So when there is a setback, it means something. It's not one of those I guess we'll just figure it out, and we have like an extra day or two to do so.
But... yeah, it's only Wednesday. We've got till next Monday to sort this out.
Right, like we're gonna take off on Sunday as you do, but you know, everything else.
Yeah, and there's it does mean that there's a scene that takes place towards the end of this film where, you know, kind of some Indian bigwig gets on the phone to his counterpart, you know, at you know, in America, and he's begging for more time. He's like, oh, you know, we need another 30 minutes, and the American guy's going, oh, you know, I can't give it to you. And it's like, I don't know why he just says, look, man, I gave you 7 days. And you're like, yeah. You haven't sorted it out now. I mean, what? We're not doing any more for you.
Yeah, and 7 days. So you got this. And it even happens. They turn a hospital into a massive military base. What do you think was going to happen in 7 days? You know, it's not the same. Yeah, it's not the same. Like, it's run rampant. Mm. And now it's – but they make it work. They are able to figure everything out. It just doesn't seem plausible. Like if you're in a hostage or a terrorist situation like that, like you kind of want to do it as quick as you can. We don't have time for like fun secret code words. We don't have time. Like, and even with that short amount of time, it makes the two groups coming together, the Indian group and the Pakistani group, to get together and form a better cooperation and team. Because before we kind of have that scene where they're like bickering back and forth, and then it's like, ah, we're buddies now. Like, I wish they would kind of put that through. This way there's that extra layer of tension of like, well, are they really working together? Is one going to try to get over on the other? And then you have that moment where it's like, oh, they are here to save me. They are here to help. We're looking for the same goals and go from there.
But, you know, that criticism aside, I did enjoy the sort of Mission Impossible style plot that drives this film along. So we have raised some questions about how good it is or how much sense it makes. But this idea that, OK, in order to complete their ultimate mission, they need to they have a couple of sort of submissions that they need to complete in order to kind of get to that end goal. And I did enjoy that type of I do enjoy that type of plot where you've got a group of people here. So you know, Tiger you know, calls up his kind of, some guy's a crack sniper, he's got some guy who's like an IT whiz, there's somebody else who's like a whiz with explosives. So you know, you've got a sort of that sort of team dynamic element playing out with these little submissions that they have to complete. And you know, I enjoyed that particular aspect of the plot, if nothing else.
For sure. I just wish that the individual team members had just a little more personality, because I felt after a while I'm like, oh, is he, okay, he's the sniper guy. Like, there wasn't something that kind of I don't know, it's not saying it's gotta be something wild like the A-Team where you got like Baracus and everything like that. Like, it just needs to be just a little something about it, you know what I mean? Like, maybe this person, they're cold and distant because of you know, a trauma they had in the past, or just enough to where it, like, again, keeps you interested. So this way, when they do interact with essentially their Pakistani counterparts, it adds for an extra level of, you know, getting the crew together and assembly and that kind of thing. So,
because there is one element of the plot, actually, which you've referred to, but perhaps we should explain to sort of just go into a little bit more detail if, you know, for people who are listening who haven't seen this film. So, you know, initially it's the Indian government, you know, calls up Tiger to lead this mission to rescue the Indian nurses. India's not too bothered about the Pakistani ones. What then we get a sort of a little sort of twist later on when suddenly when Tiger's wife, who is also a Pakistani secret agent, she suddenly turns up in Iraq with her own team of people, and they're there to rescue the Pakistani nurses, and so that they end up basically joining forces in order to complete the mission. And that's you know, sort of an interesting little wrinkle in there, because, you know, depending on how familiar you are with the history of politics between, you know, Pakistan and India, these are two countries that you know, have a very sort of long and troubled history, all relating to you know, partition, where basically the whole country was split up in 1947, big crisis and subsequent war as a result of that. And those hostilities between, or those tensions, you know, continue to this day. So the idea that to see in this film those two sort of forces joining up, it's a kind of an interesting wrinkle that adds into the plot, because also the sort of the superiors, when they hear of this team up that's taken place in the field, they're very suspicious about, you know, about that, you know, working in practice, and how that will succeed. So I thought that was an interesting sort of little dynamic that gets added into the plot of this film as well.
Oh, totally. And it caught me off guard, because I, you know, I didn't see the first one. So when they say, like, oh yeah, his wife's a Pakistani agent, I was like, oh, here we go. Like a little bit of secret espionage or something. Like, maybe he didn't know that she was a spy and they're together and she's just kind of collecting intel on him. But the government knew and they didn't say anything to him because they knew how he would react or retaliate. I built this whole thing up in my head. So when they finally meet, and it's not like that at all, like, they know each other and they know what's going on, I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of sweet. Like, you know, two different countries, two different spies, and they can make it work together. Like, that's really sweet. And how their teams come together. And there's even an interesting moment when, you know, the Indian government reaches out to the U.S. government. They're like, hey, we need time because we need to save our nurses. And the U.S. isn't bothered with those nurses. They don't care. And then the same thing replicates itself with India and Pakistan. They were like, oh, well, I'm not worried about their nurses. And I'm like, well, you know, we're not worried about yours either, but we're all humanity. We're all people. So it's this interesting thing of, like, you know, you don't want to be like the Americans. And then obviously they go calling out the Americans a couple times in there, you know, with, is he a journalist or is he a CIA plant? Like, you know, you think we're stupid, but we know exactly what you're doing. You're trying to destabilize countries, et cetera, et cetera. But I felt like, and it also, I had no idea that there had been a conflict between India and Pakistan like that. So it actually took some time to, like, learn something and then go out and do my own little bit of research, aka just a couple articles on Wikipedia through Google, and learn about it. But hey, you know what? The ignorance isn't there anymore, and I feel like I'm a better person for it.
Well, you know, the surprising spin-off benefits of watching Tigers in the High there. But, you know, let's have a look at the action in this film, because I think this is principally an action film. So what did you make of the scenes in them, and, you know, particularly the style of them?
I thought they were great. I thought there was maybe one too many slow motion shots.
I think it was more than one too many. I think there are about 126 shots too many of slow motion in this film.
There's one where Tiger picks up this big hulk of a gun and he's just firing it off. And I bet you it takes maybe 2 minutes for him to kill everybody just because of how many slow motion shots. I can understand if when he starts and gets firing it off, boom, slow motion, and then the rest, it's regular. Mm. But they just kept the slow-mo coming. And I'm like, God, fellas, this is pretty nuts. And then what I had mentioned to you, and this is similar to we touched on this topic when we discussed Doom 2. There's no blood. Mm. There's no blood as far as, like, spurting from bodies. You might see, like, cuts or bruises or something, but even then you don't see a whole lot. They cut a lot of throats in this movie, like more than I thought they were going to be. Like, they start cutting, I'm like, whoa. An American film, if it was Tarantino, it would just be, you know what I mean, gallons and gallons of blood coming out of these people, but there's no blood anywhere. You see bullets, but you don't really see, like, the dust kind of flying up around them. It's almost like it's this make-believe thing. Mm. When you're a kid, it's like, bang, bang, I shot you. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. But it still works, though. That's the thing. At no point does it feel hokey or cheesy or I'm uninvested because I'm not seeing blood or I'm not seeing, like, a true reaction to the destruction. It's just stylized and it looks good, but There's just no blood. And you don't even realize it till like later on or after the film. You're like, wait a second. There was no blood. And I think that what we talked about before with the safety and everything, it kind of adds to this like bright and color and safety kind of thing. And I guess without the blood, it does make it feel like a fantasy. Like it's not real. Like, hey, this is a movie. Because if it was real life, there would be a lot of blood. There would be a lot of terror.
But I did think – I mean, there was – very good horse and motorcycle chase in this film, which I thought was very good. There's quite there's a couple of good fight scenes in here. They're not amazing, but there is a couple of good ones. But there was a car chase in here, which it wasn't actually filmed in slow motion, but it felt like it was being filmed in slow motion because whoever was directing this just couldn't make the vehicles seem like they were going particularly quickly. So I mean, most of the cars in this sequence, I mean, it's quite cool in the sense of the environment in which this chase is taking place. They're going down these, it's like set in some sort of like old town environment in Iraq. They're going down these narrow, twisty streets. There's lots of incident within the film, but at no point does it look like a car is going faster than about 15 miles per hour. And I just felt that was a real shame that they couldn't, you know, make that bit just seem, you know, just a little bit faster.
Well, I think the big problem there is the car that they're driving is a Suzuki. My high school girlfriend had one, not a very fast, not a very reliable car. Comfortable interior, I'm not going to lie, but it was not going to whip around them corners like you wanted to. I did like that it was a little more realistic than that, and they were trying to whip around a corner, they have to bounce a little bit or keep going, and it doesn't make for intense action because of how slow it's going, but it's definitely it's a little more realistic in a film that isn't too realistic, but it's still neat. It's still neat that they just take a different stance on it. The other action scene, I forgot to mention this, I have it here on my notes, is in the very beginning when we first discover Taiga is doing like a God of War thing with his son out in the wilderness. And all of a sudden these wolves attack and they have to hurry up and get to the car. So he runs away from them on a snowboard to go save his son who's stuck in a log. It is something else. Something else. I mean, he's launching these wolves too. Like he throws one and it makes sense because in the beginning it's like no animals were hurt. And I'm like, what animals are they really? And I'm like, oh, okay, these are the animals that are okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you watched The Grey and were ultimately disappointed by the lack of, you know, wolf and human hand to paw combat, then I would really recommend watching this film because, you know, you get some proper man versus wolf combat in this particular film. So yeah, definitely worth watching for the first 5 minutes alone just to see that. But absolutely. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is what they call or what is known as a Indian masala movie. So it has this unique blend of different genres. How did that mashup work for you here, Nick?
I think it worked well because they kept it separate for the most part. Like all the romance and everything happens pretty much up front as we get to know the two characters, and then we get right into the action and espionage, which kind of intermingle, which is fine. But we don't really go back to the love and relationship part, except to touch on it maybe once or twice throughout the film, and then again at the very end when our heroes ride off into the, you know, Greek sunset eating ice cream
with their child suicide bomber friend.
That's right, with their new pal, Hassan. And Hassan became their Hassan. Oh, anyway. It kind of threw me for a loop a little bit, and that's what kind of made me feel like the pace was dragging. I mean, that's a good like 10 minutes where we're just kind of like slogging through. It's very stylized. It's very beautiful. I think they're in like Austria or something. And he's taking her on this like insane date. Like all these wild things are happening. And I'm like, this is a lot of planning, especially when his son's like, don't worry, I got it taken care of. And he did all this the day before. And then Tiger just plays it off like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on here. Like, I did all of this. Like, what?
Yeah, I enjoyed that because that did feel, you know, very much like the sort of slightly – surreal sort of, okay, we're just going to stop the film here for a bit of romance and a musical number, and as mm-hmm. you say, yeah, they sort of drive off on this I think they're marking some sort of anniversary. I think they sort of drive off on this sort of mystery date that's all been arranged by Tiger's son, and we get a nice musical number there, and Tiger paints his wife's face in snow on the side of a mountain. I generally pick up some flowers from a petrol station. That's generally seems to be enough in my life. I've never had to paint anyone's face in a mountain of snow before, but perhaps I'm just not romantic enough, Nick.
I mean, I'm a stick figure guy, so you're just gonna literally get branches thrown in the snow. And then here's the other thing too. He rigs the stairwell to where she walks certain parts, her hand slips or cuts a small twine, and like glitter falls and showers her in like glitter and joy or whatever you want it to be. And then part of me is like, is the little kid cleaning that up when they go out for snow rides and outdoor movies and a dance, and they shut down an entire city and filled it with candles so they could have a meal together? Come on, we got a week to save these nurses. Is this day one? Where does this fall in that timeline? But in all seriousness, as much as they kept it separated, I kind of wish they could have brought some of that into the action at some point, like a part where it makes sense. Like maybe there's like, the action comes down, there's a lull, and they get separated. And, Tiger's kind of distant. They're like, what's up? And he's like, I was just thinking it back to our anniversary. And then we can snip into some of those pieces and really make it feel like a mix and a mashup instead of like, yeah, we put it in here, and now let's focus on the action for the rest of it. Because then it kind of throws you because you're expecting more of a throwback. Instead, you get a cumulative like 5 minutes maybe of dialogue, like I said, before you get to the end. So it's a little uneven how they do that, but I guess it still qualifies and falls within the parameters of a Masala film.
I think the last point that I just wanted to sort of chat with you a little bit here, Nick, was, we're both big music fans. We're both record collectors. So, I wanted to talk to you about the soundtrack for this film, because apparently it was the most streamed movie soundtrack of 2017. So,
what?
Yeah, it was. I think I can't quite remember the list off the top of my head, but I think like the year after, it was like the soundtrack to the Queen film. And then I can't remember. It was like another big soundtrack was the one the year after. So, this one was, up there with these other sort of, big Hollywood hits. So, but here we've got an Indian film kind of marking into the sort of the top soundtrack market. So,
And that's worldwide?
That's worldwide. I mean, in fact, there are a lot of, I think the population of India is over a billion people. So, they've got a massive, homegrown audience for their own films and for their own music. So that is stands in their favor a little bit. But, still, as I say, it's not as if all of those statistics for every year, it's not like they're always dominated by Indian films. So, when you were watching this film, when you were listening to it, did anything strike you about the music here that it would I note the surprise in your voice. I'm guessing you're very surprised that the soundtrack here was as popular as it turns out.
It had to have just been either the song at the beginning or the song at the end, because I didn't hear anything throughout the film that really jumped out as something spectacular. And I'm not going to put a record on and listen to, hey, this is the car chase scene. Not going to happen. But I feel like the second Guardians had to have come out that year. Maybe it was the year before, but either way, a soundtrack like that, where it's more of like a mixtape and you have music from like the 60s, 70s, and 80s, to me, that would sound something like they're going to play more and more and more. But I guess some soundtracks, maybe that last song, like everybody was really into that song, because I think it was about like love and togetherness and people coming together and something like that. But that really, really surprises me. Like I'm I can't even think of anything to say. Like, truly, well, not even something goofy to say to feign. But I it must be that song. It must have been the song at the end, which.
Well, one thing that one thing that may help to explain it as well is, as I said, population of India is very big. You know, I was listening to this soundtrack on Spotify, and it is only, as you say, it is the songs that feature in the film, but there aren't that many, and the soundtrack is only 25 minutes long. So, you know, maybe one of the other reasons that it's the most streamed is because it only, you know, you can listen to the whole thing in under half an hour, so there's nothing to stop you putting it on again.
That's true.
So it's just racking up the numbers on, you know, because people are like, oh, it's finished already? Oh, I'll stick that back on. But anyway, let's wrap up our discussion of the film here, and let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cinema Recall Podcast here at thatmomentin.com. I am your host, The Vern, and on each episode, myself, along with a guest, we'll be talking about an iconic scene from a classic movie. Which films will we be discussing? Well, that's all up to you, because before each episode airs, we are going to be giving you a poll of great flicks to choose from. Whichever one gets the most votes, that's the one we'll be talking about. So, listen to the Cinema Recall Podcast on the site thatmomentin.com, or on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or Podomatic, or SoundCloud. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy it.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs early in the film during the sequence when the nurses end up being kidnapped. They're caught in a gunfight between Abu Usman and the Iraqi police, Usman being the main villain of this film. The battle escalates when a police helicopter comes into view. However, the terrorists have a rocket launcher to hand. They fire it at the chopper, hitting the tail rotor. The damaged whirlybird spins around in the sky before disappearing behind a building, after which we see a large fireball rise up into the sky. So, Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I'm not going to lie. I was a little disappointed. I saw this happen early on in the film, and I'm like, okay, it's a prelude to what's to come. And there was never another helicopter explosion. All of the, you know, armies and groups that they're facing, not a single additional helicopter explosion. I'd like to see the explosion. I'd like to feel – I don't know. I like seeing it. And this one, we don't get that. It feels incomplete. You know, obviously it swings behind and we get the after effect of the fireball, but it doesn't it's missing something for me. It doesn't quite do it for me. And it's also cut very short. It's what, maybe all of 6 seconds that it happens in. It's very quickly, as soon as you see the fire, they cut away. And, you know, like we've talked about before and with other films, there's this real like violence, nonviolence thing. So obviously they don't want to dwell on what's happening. They want to cut away. But I don't know. It looks real, though. I will say that, like, it definitely looks better than some of the ones we see with, like, you know, CGI or false fire or something like that. But it definitely it leaves me wanting more.
Yeah, I completely understand. And yeah, I would agree with you. I you know, it's a hoary old trope of helicopter explosions of the past where you have the aircraft disappear behind a ridge line or a building before exploding. So it's a bit irritating, to say the least, to see that still taking place in this day and age, and especially in you know, a film like this. Because one of the things I do enjoy about watching Indian action movies, or, you know, these Indian masala movies, is because they, you know, generally are, you know, have very high production values. They clearly have big budgets to work with. I haven't investigated the exchange rate, you know, between the rupee and the dollar, so I don't know how they necessarily stack up between you know, films coming out of the Hollywood studio system. But clearly they have big budgets. You can just tell from the look of the film, the location shooting that they do. So it is a bit of a shame that they didn't really sort of bother to actually, you know, show us this you know, helicopter crash hitting into the ground, and you know, we actually get to see a little bit more of the explosion.
I'm watching it like kind of on loop right now as we talk about it. What disappoints me too is it seems like there's a disconnect between when the helicopter goes behind and when the actual explosion happens. It feels like it's this automatic thing, and I feel like there should be a little bit of time or there should be a little more something. It just the more I look at it, the more technically it feels off. I do agree with you. I feel like the budget, as big as it is, I mean, they went to Austria. They went to, I'm assuming, several locations in and around the Middle East and Northern Africa to simulate, Iraq and the city and everything like that. They went to Greece for the big dance number at the end. So the money is there to do stuff, but try to come up with something maybe a little more creative. I do like, and again, this is going back to like a bit of the realistic thing, when the rocket launcher goes, it hits the back tail near the propeller. And it kind of spins that way a little bit. It's not just an immediate explosion, not that instant gratification. But I think it's that build up to where you want it, and then it doesn't happen, where you feel a little jilted. But yeah, I agree with you. With the budget they have, they could have done something much more creative or something. They could have just done something a little bit better with it.
Definitely. This one, yeah. I think we have to file this under the category of underwhelming, I think, this one. Well, I think we probably should wrap things up here on this show. So, yeah, Nick, do you want to do the obligatory plugs?
If you don't mind. Nick Rehack, French Toast Sunday, FrenchToastSunday.com. You can check us out there. Obviously, past episodes of the Exploding Helicopter Podcast. If you like when hearing me and Will talk at the same time, we were on a recent episode of the Lambcast, and we were invited on as Lambywits to learn about each other. And while we learned about each other, we also realized we don't really know each other all that well.
I know about as much about you, Nick, as I really want to. So.
But it was a great time to be had. There's a newer podcast out there called Movies and Tea. Elwood and Kim are the host. Elwood Jones, not sure if you all are familiar with him out there. Each season they take a look at a director's filmography. They're working on a third season right now, but I just recorded an episode with them talking about Zodiac, the David Fincher film. So keep an ear out for when that comes out.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. Before you go, I'd just like to say thanks for listening. We know you don't have to. It's obviously only a matter of time before you find something better to listen to. But while you're here, we're very grateful. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.